You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras American League East. I'm Matt Wehmeyer. The Yankees on the brink of joining the postseason mix. The Blue Jays already there. Toronto with a big win over Baltimore on Monday, but it was the way that the Blue Jays won that gives the Blue Jays and their fans optimism that they can make a deep run into the 2015 postseason.
Gregor, a pleasure as always as we speak here on a Tuesday afternoon. The Blue Jays' magic number to wrap up the East reduced to 2. They really grinded out to win on Monday night, 4-3 comeback victory against the Orioles after trailing for the majority of that game. You know, as nice as it is to see this team hit 100 homers every night and put up lopsided wins and score in double figures, are these the types of victories like they had Monday that give you the most confidence that the Jays can do some serious damage in the postseason?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is especially a team that really struggled in the first half of the year before. This is a rebuilt team in close ball games. In one-run games, they really, really struggled. And we've seen a bit of a difference in that since the trade deadline, since they brought in some new guys, obviously. But there's still been the occasional struggle in one-run games. And what this team definitely needs to do is find a way to you know, come through in those. And you know, I think the bottom of the order is really the one that you kind of look at for an ability to manufacture some runs. And we've seen that recently. And guys like Kevin Pillar and Ryan Goins, they're not guys who get a lot of attention in this offense. And rightfully so when you've got, you know, a heart of the order that includes Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion. You know, the list goes on there. And they're going to win the majority of their games with home runs. But as we know, in the postseason especially, with the good pitching that the Blue Jays are going to face, they're going to have to find some other ways to score as well. And I think the production from Pillar and Goins is going to be key. And then you add into that an improved bullpen. And that really is how you kind of grind out some of these games. And they've had a lot of good experience over the last couple of weeks of playing some really close affairs with, you know, the Yankees in addition to this series against Baltimore. And that has to be an encouraging sign for a team that is really expecting to go deep into the postseason.
And, Gregor, can that be an infectious thing where, again, if you have a win like you had on Monday, trailing 3-1, then 3-2, come back to win 4-3, can that carry over into the next series of games in days and weeks ahead where if they are trailing, say, entering the 7th or 8th inning, they have that confidence instilled in them that they can come back and win, whereas maybe in the first half of the season that was not always present?
Yeah, no, for sure. And with this offense, you're never out of a game. You know, they've kind of shown the ability to do that time and time again as well. And I think the biggest area of improvement is, you know, especially that bullpen, when you look at the ability to, if they do fall behind early, to keep things close. And you add that in with some of the performance that they've had from starters. You know, a guy like Marco Estrada the last couple of times out has fallen behind early, but he's really settled down after like the first or second inning and found a way to keep his team in the game and then hand things over to the bullpen, where you have guys like Brett Cecil, who have just been really lights out now for going back a couple of months. So you kind of add all that in together with the offense, and when you're going to get good pitching with this type of team, the way they can hit, you know, you'd never want to fall behind early, obviously, but the fact that it's happened and they've been able to overcome that multiple times really kind of shows that there really isn't a game that this team, you know, is 100% out of.
And prior to Monday's game in Baltimore, Troy Tulowitzki spoke with reporters about his status. He said that he will definitely, his words, be ready for the postseason. Talk about his rehab process since getting injured in the Bronx against the Yankees and what his return might mean for some of the guys who have picked up the slack and filled in during his absence.
Yeah, it's a huge development, and especially, you know, you look at this team, you know, they're pretty close to being guaranteed of winning the division at this point. They would have to really fall off, and it's kind of looked that way since the Yankee series. So the one remaining stress for this organization, really the only thing that they could stress over, was the health of Tulowitzki. You know, there was some doubt about whether or not he'd be able to make it back this season. He said all along that he was optimistic about it, but until you actually saw him progressing through some of his baseball activities, there had to be some level of doubt, because this is a pretty serious injury, and there wasn't a lot of time to heal. But he seems to be kind of rounding into form just in the right time. He was able to take deep on-field BP on Monday. You know, that's a process he's repeating this week. And There's even a chance he'll play at some point in time during the Baltimore series. If it doesn't happen in Baltimore, then it'll likely happen in Tampa Bay. And, you know, it's just going to make the Blue Jays that much better. You know, he's been he's obviously a very solidifying force on defense, and I think more than anything, they want to get him a game or two during the regular season just to you know, help improve his timing at the plate going into the postseason, just get a few at-bats under his belt. But it's definitely a big development, and just really goes to improve the overall depth of this team. You know, Ryan Goins has done an incredible job filling in at shortstop, but he can easily slide over to second base, and that's where you'd ideally have him with Tulowitzki in the lineup. And then you don't have to worry about piecing together second like the Jays have been trying to do over the last couple weeks with, you know, Cliff Pennington, Darwin Barney, Munenori Kawasaki. They've kind of had multiple guys rotating through there. You know, if Tulowitzki's able to make it back, you don't have to worry about that anymore. You simply go with Tulowitzki at shortstop and Ryan Goins at second base. And that's definitely the best alignment, both defensively and even offensively for the Blue Jays.
And there's no question that Tulo is dying to get back to the postseason for the first time since 2007 when he made it to the World Series as a member of the Colorado Rockies. Gregor, on the pitching end of things, hard to overstate just how huge Marcus Stroman's return has been for this team. He's been dazzling in his last two starts, especially against the Red Sox and the Yankees. Just a fun guy to watch on the mound. Very emotional, very demonstrative, and he wears his emotions on his sleeve. Definitely forced himself into the conversation for the postseason roster after only three starts, after we thought he'd be gone for the entire 2015 season. That obviously not the case. What do you think will become of Marcus Stroman in October?
Well, I think he's definitely going to slot into the rotation. There's no question about that. And, you know, if you were to really look at this prior to his arrival, and if you were to point at an area of weakness, he probably still would fit the starting rotation. It was still an area where they could have really needed to add another starter. You know, they ended up being able to do it kind of in an unorthodox fashion. I don't think people expected Stroman to be back. And if they did expect him to be back, it was, you know, probably going to be the bullpen. But the Jays have a lot of options down there in that bullpen. They don't have as many options in the rotation. And adding that guy to the piece just gives them another, you know, guy with upside of a frontline starter. You know, that's exactly what he's been since he came back. You know, he's really exceeded expectations that way. But to me, he's really looked like he's in midseason form. And, you know, he's had a really nice ability to limit left-handed hitters. He's shown an improved slider already this year compared to where it was last year. He's really been able to use that to get in on the hands of lefties. And, you know, it just makes the entire rotation one through four that much better. And all of a sudden, you know, you're going into a postseason series with David Price as your clear number one and Marcus Stroman as your clear number two. And that matches up with pretty much, you know, any team in baseball outside of maybe the Los Angeles Dodgers with the, you know, the Cy Young candidates that they have. But this really puts the Jays in contention to try and pitch with anybody out there. And you can't, you know, you really can't overstate the importance of getting Stroman back. And, you know, when you have a team that has aspirations of making it all the way, you know, basically to the World Series, you know, you need those frontline guys. And Stroman has more than delivered on his end. And it's kind of the icing on the cake for a team that already looked competitive before. To be able to add a piece like that, you know, in the second week of September is basically unheard of.
Brian, I want to get your take on Michael Pineda. It's, you know, here we go again, another Jekyll and Hyde performance. He was serving up BP in that first inning. Red Sox put up six runs. From there, save for a Mookie Betts homer in the fifth, the guy was pretty much lights out. I mean, was his performance last night kind of a microcosm of his entire season?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it gives you some reason for concern. I mean, look, the Yankees are going to go to the postseason, and they're going to at least play in that wild card game. And assuming they get through that, you're going to need to count on Michael Pineda. And you can't have one of those Jekyll and Hyde performances, especially in a big spot. I mean, this is a Red Sox team with nothing left to play for but pride. And they're coming into Yankee Stadium. Obviously, they want to be spoiler. These teams don't go out there trying to lose. But I think that if you were looking for a softer matchup than what the Yankees are going to see over the next week or two, this is it. And the fact that he couldn't get through the batting order in the first inning without them batting around the six runs. I mean, he was hit hard, and you could see the frustration on his face. Those were not encouraging signs. It's encouraging that he came back and righted the ship and finished strong, but when you're in a postseason situation like that, I mean, the first inning like that could be enough, and obviously it was last night, too. The Yankees came back with four in the bottom of the first, and that still wasn't enough. So you don't want to be in that situation, especially if you're in a do-or-die game. And Michael Pineda is going to have the ball in some pretty big games if the Yankees get past that wild card game. So I think it's something they need to straighten out. He's been, you've seen the best of him. You've seen the worst of him this year. They need the best of him right now.
He is the ultimate flip-the-coin pitcher, if you will, Michael Pineda, certainly here in 2015. And, Brian, going back one night prior on Monday to the opener of the four-game series, the Yankees were shut down by Eduardo Rodriguez, who is a left-hander. And, of course, it's been a recurring theme all year that the Yankees have had their struggles against lefties. And when you look at the potential playoff landscape in the AL, you've got David Price in Toronto, Cole Hamels in Texas, Dallas Keuchel in Houston. So when you look at that end of it, how big of a concern is this for the Yankees?
Yeah, I think it's a minefield for them. It's something they definitely need to be concerned about. I saw a stat somewhere that in this recent run here, their OPS against left-handed pitching has been hovering right around 650, which I think is pretty much explains why they're struggling so much. This lineup really does miss Mark Teixeira, who was a switch-hitting force. He could hit from the right side of the plate. He hit in the heart of the lineup against lefties. And they're a different team without him. I think that you're seeing right now, A-Rod has been fading since August 1st, especially against left-handed pitching. They're in a situation where Greg Bird, as good as he's been, he's not hitting left-handed pitching. I think he's two for his last 20 against lefties. So that led to them working out John Ryan Murphy at first base, a position he's never played before. He's only caught in the big leagues. He plays in third base in the minors. But I think that signals their desperation to get another offensive bat in that lineup. Chris Young was a lefty killer early in the season, and he's kind of quietly hit around the Mendoza line after the All-Star break against lefties. So that kind of disappeared. I think it's been a confluence of things, but you look at everything right now, you go into a playoff matchup with those kind of the caliber of pitchers you mentioned, and it's tough to let the Yankees chance against a left-handed pitcher, especially of that quality.
And, Brian, as I touched on at the onset, barring something miraculous for the Yankees and utterly catastrophic for the Blue Jays, the Yankees are going to be in the wild card game. As, again, we're talking here on Wednesday, the Blue Jays' magic number to clinch the East is at 1. But if you try to look at the bright side of things here, once the Yankees are secured in that wild card spot, could that perhaps allow them to give some valuable rest for certain guys that they otherwise could not have afforded if they were in a dogfight up until game 162 for that division crown?
Yeah, I mean, that'll help. I think they wish they'd already been able to do that. At this point, I'm thinking about Dylan Betances and Andrew Miller. You're still pushing to lock up a spot, and they could be in a situation here where you could have been resting those guys already. I think that the horse has left the barn on the American League East. I think that, you know, obviously you look at the numbers, and it would be incredibly difficult to get there. So the Yankees' focus right now should be on the wild card, I think rightfully so, but they haven't clinched anything yet. So I know it's a minuscule chance, but you got to keep pushing until you get there. There's a lot of guys in this lineup who are banged up. I think that if you could give guys like Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury and Carlos Beltran and Alex Rodriguez, and the list goes on, Chase Headley, Brian McCann, you want to give these guys a break before the postseason. You want them at their best when that wild card game comes around, and right now they haven't been able to do that, but especially with the bullpen, I think that the sooner they can lock something up and at least know they're in, they can start giving a break to Miller and Betances. Because I really do think they'll go as far as those two guys can take them. I think that if you get a lead through six, you feel pretty good about your chances with Wilson and Betances and Miller. I mean, Dylan Betances was saying the other day, in the postseason, if they need him to go three innings, he'll do it. He doesn't care. I don't think Joe Girardi would go that far, but he may not need to. I think that you have that trio at the back end. You feel pretty good if you have a lead through six.
As we chat on a Tuesday afternoon, Ian, a pleasure as always, and a whole heck of a lot going on with this team's front office. You need a flow chart or something to keep it all together. This past week alone, Mike Hazen named the new GM. Former Braves GM Frank Wren has been brought aboard. The new senior VP of baseball operations, current CEO Sam Kennedy, is going to take over for Larry Lucchino as team president in mid-October. Lucchino, meanwhile, given emeritus status by the team. And on top of all that, Jerry DePoto leaves the Red Sox. He's now the new GM in Seattle. It's enough to make your head spin. So, Ian, just take a few moments to kind of break this all down, break down the power structure of this new-look front office. And, of course, let's not forget about Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah, no, there's certainly a lot of a lot of changes, but, you know, one thing hasn't changed, and that's that, you know, James Dombrowski is the guy that's running the team right now, and the guys he's bringing in are going to be good support guys. But I think they made a lot of good changes. They've kind of they've gone about it in different ways, where they promoted a guy from within, and Mike Hazen, who has been with this team, you know, for a long time and knows the ins and outs, knows all the prospects, has background with every player in the organization. And Dave Dombrowski and, you know, Mike's going to be the GM. And then Dave brings in one of his most trusted confidants in Frank Wren, you know, a guy he worked with in Montreal and in Florida, to help, you know, help evaluate other teams. And they sort of think the same way. So I think a lot of excitement here with the Red Sox. I really like the way Dave has gone about this. You know, he didn't just take the job and rip it apart by storm and just bring it all his own. He talked to every single person in the organization, every single person in baseball operations, to gauge, you know, to take the temperature and do as he saw fit. And he did all this for, you know, a month before he really went out and made moves and made hires and made promotions. So I think Dave deserves a lot of credit for just, you know, the very methodical way he's gone about this here in Boston.
Yeah, he's certainly gone to work since inheriting that job with the Red Sox. And, Ian, I'm curious about Jerry Dipoto, of course, a former GM with the Angels before he was named the new GM of the Mariners on Monday. At any point, was he under consideration for the Red Sox opening, considering that that had been open for a couple of months once Ben Cherington had departed?
Yeah, no, Dave Dombrowski said last week at Fenway, he said, look, I really want to hire Jerry Dipoto. And, you know, this was after he decided to make Hazen the general manager. I don't know if he had made that offer to Dipoto first. I'm really not sure. But, you know, I think that just that Jerry was in a position where he was being courted with other teams to have a more powerful role than he had with the Red Sox. So, hey, you know, Dave Dombrowski, like I said, is really the guy here in Boston. And Jerry Dipoto could really make his stamp on that front office in Seattle. So I think that's all it was. But, yeah, Dombrowski would have loved to have had a guy like Dipoto. He's a very highly regarded.
No question, but I'm sure, you know, people are very high on Mike Hazen. And what sort of relationship was there between Mike Hazen and Ben Cherington? Did Cherington kind of take Hazen under his wing? What was that dynamic like now that Cherington's gone and Hazen has inherited his old position?
Yeah, you know, I don't think he really took him under his wing, so to speak, because, you know, these guys are similar ages. They kind of came up together in sort of a front office farm system under Theo Epstein, where they were two of Theo's most trusted guys. I think they spoke the same language a little bit because, look, before Ben Cherington was the general manager of the Red Sox, he was their farm director. You know, when Mike Hazen was hired by the Red Sox, he was their farm director after doing a very good job of that in Cleveland. And Hazen and Cherington knew a lot of the same executives with the Indians. So I think there was a lot of history there between the two, and just two like-minded guys. But it wasn't like a protege, mentor type of thing. It was just kind of two guys who worked well together. But, yeah, I think that there was some skepticism when this Dombrowski hire happened that Hazen would stay within the organization just because he didn't have any history with Dombrowski. I don't even know if Hazen necessarily thought he was going to be sticking around. Because anytime, you know, the new boss comes in, you think he's just going to want to bring in a lot of his own people. So it's a good story. You know, Mike Hazen's a guy who grew up in Abington, Massachusetts, rooting for the Red Sox, and, you know, he's lived in Boston for a lot of his life. He did go off and work for the Indians, like I said, for quite a while. But you know, this guy is a hard worker, one of the most respected executives in the organization. He's kind of been due for a GM job for a long time here. So I think it's a good story, well-deserved, that Mike Hazen gets to be the general manager of this team.
And, of course, another guy that grew up in Massachusetts as a diehard Red Sox fan and one day became the team's GM did not fare too badly. Of course, Theo Epstein, responsible for two world titles and doing a heck of a job at the helm of the Chicago Cubs these days. Ian, let's talk about Larry Lucchino a little bit, given a nice send-off by the Red Sox prior to the home finale on Sunday against Baltimore. Lucchino, you cannot deny his success, obviously, during his time with the Red Sox, and he has a long track record of success even far before he joined the Red Sox. He's had his controversies as well, of course, over the years. Something of a polarizing figure to some people. What do you think his Red Sox legacy ultimately will be?
Oh, there's no doubt. Larry Lucchino's legacy is, you know, just the rebuilding of Fenway Park. I mean, you look at that park, what it is now in the year 2015 versus what it was in 2001, really, when these guys bought the team at the end of the 2001 season. That ballpark It's an old ballpark with a beautiful new feel to it at the same time. And this guy is a brilliant man when it comes to ballparks, and he put the right people in place to renovate Fenway Park. And just, you know, the Red Sox have never been a more successful business as they have been with Larry Lucchino as their president and CEO. So, you know, even if he's ruffled some people the wrong way in a contract negotiation here or there, maybe cost him a player with his, tough love, bad cop attitude sometimes, you know, there's no question that this guy has did a tremendous job as the CEO of the Red Sox, and I think could be in the Hall of Fame one day as a baseball executive. If you look at the amount of championships he's won between Baltimore and Boston, the ballparks he built, and essentially Baltimore, San Diego, and the one he renovated in Boston, just so many good things to say about his skills in the business world. So yeah, I think his legacy is safe. And look, it's not like he's going away. Larry Lucchino is still going to be around the Red Sox, just in a different sort of role going forward. Just kind of that almost like a sort of consultant type of role. But no doubt about his legacy.
Matt Moore looks really good again, Bill. Seven innings of one-run ball. Last three starts, his ERA is 1.31. After struggling so badly in his first eight starts before this current stretch, what has he done differently to get this whole thing turned around?
Well, I think it's more or less just, he had said all along that he needed to get better putting guys away once he had two strikes. He's done a better job doing that. And I just think he's got a better feel out there now than he had earlier, which is to be expected for anybody coming back from Tommy John surgery. But now he probably is in the right arm slot, and, he's feeling all of his off-speed pitches. So the last three times out, he's looked like, the best of Matt Moore.
And, Bill, when you look at Matt Moore, when he's on his A game and at his finest, and then you look at Chris Archer, and he's at the top of his game, I know we get caught up in saying this guy's the number one, this guy's the number two, this guy's the ace, and so on and so forth. But when both guys are at their best, which one of those two would you designate as the true ace of this staff?
Well, right now you got to say Archer, just because I think his work has been a little more complete than Moore's. But Moore certainly is, right there in the conversation. So they could have a real nice situation next year between Moore, Archer, and Smiley. And then you got Odorizzi not too far behind. And then, the guy who went into the season as the number one, Alex Cobb, should be back with the team towards the end of next year. But from what we've learned, obviously, watching Moore, it's tough to expect a lot when they first come back from Tommy John surgery.
And, of course, Erasmo Ramirez, he might throw his name into that mix as well. Could make for a very interesting competition for those five rotation spots in spring training coming up in 2016. Bill, I want to get your take on Mikey Mattsuk as well. He's come on really strong as of late in a game-tying homer on Monday night. And going back a couple of weeks, he had that 5-for-5 game against the Orioles. And what kind of a ceiling do you see for him as he continues to develop?
Well, of course, he was a number one pick of the Rays, and it's taken him a little bit of time to get here, but you look at him and he's athletic, and that's something they've kind of missed ever since the days of BJ and Carl Crawford. So that's one thing you see right away. His athleticism jumps out at you, and he's made pretty consistent contact. I mean, you look at his average, he's right at 300. He's a strong kid. He played football growing up. He's got good power, so I think he's got a real upside, and he's made the most of his chance. I mean, he's in the conversation for next spring.
Absolutely, and I believe I said he hit a game-tying homer Monday. It was actually Tuesday as the Rays came back to beat the Marlins 4-2 last night as Drubal Cabrera with the tie-breaking two-run homer to give the Rays the win. Another young guy I want to get your thoughts on, Bill, Steven Souza Jr. You look at the overall numbers, they're not quite what the Rays expected them to be after he was acquired in the offseason, that big deal with the Nationals, but still a modest four-game hitting streak entering Wednesday. Began with a four-hit performance against the Red Sox at Fenway Park last week. When you look at the entire pie here, how would you assess his first full season as a big leaguer?
Well, I think the big thing is, I would have liked to have seen a little more. But, he went on the disabled list two times, for extended periods. And I know the first time he went on, it was right after he was coming out of a slump. So, he was a little bit streaky, and he looked like he was just getting ready to start hitting the ball, and he goes on the DL. So, you would have liked to have seen that play out before he had to go on the disabled list. And, just kind of get more of what he can do. But just like, you know, Machuk, this guy's got, you know, five-tool potential. So, you know, suddenly they've got a pretty nice-looking outfield out there.
Yeah, no question. A lot of young guys in that mix, all making big contributions here down the stretch and giving a lot of hope and optimism for the 2016 season. Bill, when you look at Souza Jr., does he remind you of anybody that either is currently on the team or has been on the team in past years? Is there anybody that you kind of compare him to in terms of his abilities and what kind of player he could become?
You know what? He's not really. For the Rays, no. I mean, he's a little bit unique. I mean, he's a big guy, strong guy. You know, if he starts to really making good contact and really maybe being a little more aggressive, I mean, you know, this guy could be a, you know, 30 home run guy at least. I think he's got that kind of power. He's a great guy to have around the clubhouse. Everybody loves him. So, you know, I just think he's going to be a big part of the puzzle going forward. And, you know, a lot of things, I think he's one of the things that Rays fans can get excited about.
Brittany, a pleasure as always, and like I touched on, the O's were swept right out of Fenway Park last weekend. Not only that, the team fails to score a single run in the entire three-game series. To you, did the O's just have the look of a team simply going through the motions, or was the Red Sox pitching simply that good?
I think it's a combination of the two. One, I mean, the Orioles really have struggled this year with that lineup, and there's been some stretches where Chris Davis has been able to carry them offensively, and when he's not, you get games like you saw in Boston. And it wasn't against particularly good pitching. It's just a matter of the Orioles being a very strikeout-prone lineup, and you saw what Orioles fans have really been frustrated by all year, and that's these stretches where it doesn't look like they're ever going to score another run. Now, last night's game, of course, they were able to score, but it wasn't enough, and it was too few, too far in between there. So they're really a lineup that's going to have to get better this offseason if they're going to do anything to combat what's been the issue this year.
And, Brittany, you mentioned Chris Davis briefly, and, of course, he came inches away from getting the Orioles on the scoreboard on Friday night, if not for the spectacular shutout-preserving game-ending catch of Mookie Betts in right field. That was the talk of the baseball world for at least a couple of days. It's the fifth time this year that Davis has been robbed of a home run. When it happened once or twice, you say, it's just rotten luck. Now it's just bordering on absurd that, like I said, it's happened five times. In your dealings with him, does he kind of shrug this off and say, yeah, I'm snake bitten, whatever? Or is he starting to show some frustration here that he's still got 40-plus home runs, but with those extra five, you know, it's he'd have that many more, of course.
I mean, he kind of jokes about it. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, you look at simply how good these catches are. And, you know, Chris Davis hits the ball a long way. I don't know if people are more prepared to play deep, so they're a little bit further back than they normally would be, maybe in line a little bit better to make those catches. I'm not so sure what it is about Chris Davis, but he's been a good sport about it. What are you going to do? He's got over 40 home runs anyway. I'm sure he would like to have those home runs and those RBIs heading into a free agent season, but again, it's a case of baseball, and it's really the tough break.
Yeah, it certainly was. And to see Mookie Betts make that catch against anybody would be headline worthy, but to have it against Chris Davis, you got, I think even Red Sox fans got a feel for the poor guy at this point. Again, the fifth time this year he's been robbed of a home run. Brittany, obviously the Red Sox pitching effort last weekend helped immensely by the absence of Adam Jones. Played only one game of the series. That was the 2-0 loss on Sunday. Jones went 1-for-4. He's been battling some back issues lately. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, he's been battling that. He had shoulder issues before that. It's really a case of kind of day by day with him. He's the guy who really is unfortunate. He's prided himself on playing almost every game. You go back and look over the past three seasons, I think he played at least 160 games, if not more. So for him to not be in the lineup shows you two things. It shows you, one, that the Orioles really are out of this postseason race, and two, how hurting Adam Jones is. I mean, he turned 30 this year. He's kind of joking around. The guys were saying to him, you know, you feel slower, you feel different. And he kind of thought he was invincible, but he really is taking the brunt of a lot of physical issues this year. So nothing serious, the Orioles don't think, but they don't want it again to turn into something serious where he has to have surgery this offseason. So right now it's kind of a wait-and-see type thing with Adam Jones. They're not going to put him in every game just to put him in.
Thanks once again for joining us on this edition of MLB.com Extras American League East.